Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. We are your hosts. I'm Kim France.
And I'm Jen Romolini.
How are you doing, Jen?
Well, it's really strange, like what a difference a week makes. We recorded this episode that everyone's about to hear last week. And I was like an emotional wreck. I was an emotional wreck in the beginning of the episode. I pulled it out through the episode. And now I'm fine. Like, I'm totally fine this week. But last week, my like serotonin was like in the shitter.
Yeah.
And now I'm fine. And it's just weird. And it's so important to remember that it's just like a river.
I was about to say, it's like the best advice or one of the best pieces of advice you can give someone when they're having like a bad day or, you know, they're depressed. It's just like something's going to happen next.
Yes. Yes. It's
something always happened. Like in the first time I had a really serious deep depression that lasted for months and was resistant to medication, like half the pain was this lack of knowledge of how anything was going to get better.
Yeah.
But then when you've had depression and then it gets better, then it still sucks when it's going on, but you know, at least that it's going to be finite.
Yeah. I had like 3 days last week that were completely bleak. And I was like, is this it? Like, is this the way where is like joy? You know, like I was taking cold showers. I was just like trying to like jumpstart myself out of it, you know, because I just felt it. Like I felt that like lie down, like don't want to do anything. Like, and that's unusual for me. And then it just kind of moved through. Like, so dumb. I was really hating my hair. I got my hair done. You know, it's just like things just like sort of moved through. I connected with some friends. I got regulated my hormone therapy, which I had been sort of dysregulated on. And now it's a week later and I'm a totally functioning human being. I mean, normal amount of sad.
A normal amount of sad. Well, isn't that what like Freud said we're all supposed to reach? A point like this, the point of therapy is to reach a point where you have ordinary misery.
I don't know if that's what he said, but I do agree with that. And also just like my husband was out of town last week. Right. And so I was really darkly depressed and I had, you know, solo parenting, like, you know, making sure the collage is getting done and the math test is studied for and everything. And what I really did was I just like kind of dropped the ball. Like I was like, you know what? I'm not making dinner tonight. Let's order takeout. Like I really was just, I let myself off the hook for some things, mm-hmm. which I really needed to do. I needed to accept where I was at instead of fighting it. And like the kid didn't care. I mean, we didn't have popcorn for dinner, but kind of.
Well, can I just say, speaking of Alex being out of town, Paul and I hung out with Alex last week.
Yes, it was so weird. It was so weird. He got to hang out with you alone. I was like, what's happening?
And we had the best time with Alex. Oh my God. He was doing a talk at a bookstore near our house. And it was totally full, like, you know, a packed house. And then we met him at a bar afterward. And he's just awesome. I'd never really, I mean, other than that time we all went out to dinner in Los Angeles, which was just frankly like anxious.
Yes, because it was like all of our first time meeting each other. Like it was like, whoa, yeah.
But it was like the first time that I've had like a whole conversation with Alex, and he's so awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome. He is an awesome man. He truly is. I've said it before. I married well, and he is an awesome man. And that's what makes long-term marriage possible. And that is why I've never left, even in the hard times, because I have a partner who's pretty great. You know, I got lucky. Yeah. I know that. So that was my week of just like, and then I feel like I learned a lot by the end of it. I was like, oh, okay. There were some things that came up by the end and that was like personal, whatever. But by the end of like that like 3 or 4 day like depression, I had a better understanding of where I am right now in a way that I hadn't, mm-hmm. which is also important, is just being like, okay, all right, this is what I need to do next.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. I was worried about you last week.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know how much Natalie will edit the episode, but like I couldn't even like choke through the intro, which I think Natalie will be able to take out, but you won't hear me like sobbing during the intro. But we have a really good show today.
Yeah.
We have a really good show with Kristen Lasanti, who is somewhat different for us in terms of guests because she's mostly worked in the corporate world. She works as an executive coach. She's done a lot in like, you know, what we used to call HR, but now we call like culture and people, like chief people officer. And, you know, and I thought that she would be really useful because a lot of the things she works on with people is like how to understand what's happening to you and affect real change in your life, which I think can be so mm-hmm. terrifying for people.
Can be so terrifying, but she talked about it in such a way that it was not terrifying and felt achievable. And she is a proponent of one of my favorite things, which is tiny, manageable steps.
Yes. And also the other thing we talk about all the time, radical acceptance. Those two things.
Yep.
So should we just get into the episode?
Let's get into it.
Our guest today is Kristen Lasanti. For the past 25 years, Kristen has held executive level culture, talent, and communication roles at global firms, coaching CEOs, advising senior leadership teams, and building healthy work cultures in businesses around the world. Most recently, Kristen served as Chief Culture Officer for the public relations giant BCW, stewarding cultural integration during the largest merger in public relations history, and establishing an organization culture rooted in a growth mindset. In that role, Kristen launched the industry's first mindfulness-based leadership development program, which trained 200 executives and emerging leaders on every continent to lead with vision, intention, and humanity. Kristen is an experienced coach, certified mindfulness teacher, and a cancer survivor. She teaches leaders and teams how to meet the complexity, volatility, and resistance we all feel at work with openness, ease, and even joy. Welcome, Kristen. Hi. Good morning. Hi.
Hi. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm kind of nervous to interview you because in a way, like you and I have known each other for a really long time. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is because in addition to being one of my closest friends and a person I feel often I don't deserve, you are one of the wisest people I know. Like I have a lot of smart friends, but few are wise. You consistently show up appropriately. You make excellent decisions. You give incredible advice and you are a model for me for how to live. Okay. I don't know. I'm going to start crying. I don't know what's happening in this podcast today.
No.
Okay.
It is too early,
I know,
for
but
tears.
It's going to come. And one of the things that you are best at is being excellent at embracing change, which is something that we can get really hard as we age and become more emotionally rigid. Kristen, what is your relationship with change?
This is a question I think about a lot, actually. This is the work that I do now, is helping leaders and teams and organizations navigate profound change, whether that's within their organization or in the world that is changing so much every day. my relationship to change at this point, I am kind of a change junkie, to be totally honest. I know a lot of people don't like change or afraid of change. That's never been my issue. But I think that I used to have much more of a command and control approach to change, kind of a type A. If I can like make the perfect plan, make it all happen, control all the variables, that was my relationship to change for a long time. And now it's much more playful. I would say if I had to pick a word, it would be playful. I like to play with change. I like to experiment. I like to see what works. I like to see what doesn't work. And I like to have some fun with it and stay loose. And I think my relationship to change has gotten a lot healthier since making that shift in particular.
How do you think that happened? What's responsible for that?
You know, I think a lot of my own inner work contributes to that shift. So, you know, therapy starting years ago, starting to confront some of those type A tendencies that were perhaps not serving me all that well. I see this a lot in the leaders that I coach today. So I ran up against the brick wall of those tendencies and the limits of what they could do for me and for whatever objectives I was pursuing at that time. And then, but I think the game changer probably, which came from therapy, a therapist told me, you know, therapy's been good for you, but I think really what you need to do is start meditating. And I said, that's nonsense. I'm not a meditation person. Not for me. And, but eventually I gave in and took a class, and it really, that practice has shifted a lot for me in terms of how I relate to the world and how I relate to myself. And that's why it's a real cornerstone of the work that I do with leaders and teams in navigating change, helping them come back to the moment and meet what is rather than what we want it to be.
What do you think you, what is it that made you want to focus on the topic of change? You teach a class in change.
Yeah. My whole career really has been about change. So before I moved into the talent space, the culture space, the organizational change space, I was in marketing and advertising, and I worked on social change campaigns. That was what I did, public awareness campaigns around issues like obesity prevention, early childhood development, et cetera. So I've always been interested in, fascinated by, and working on change. But I think that the course that I just launched, which is called Agents of Radiant Change, where that came from is because I think I found that one of our greatest challenges around working with change is this expectation that we have, that change, it moves in a straight line, right? What it looks like is, you know, we start at point A, change is needed, change must happen. We write that plan that I mentioned earlier, the perfect plan. We deploy and deliver the plan. And then voila, mission accomplished and change happens. And if it doesn't go that way, something's wrong. The plan's wrong, or the change can't happen, or most often, you are the wrong person to lead the change, right? That's kind of the story that gets into our heads. And the thing is, that change has literally never happened that way. No change, not in terms of your personal life of, you know, wanting to maybe live a healthier lifestyle, and not at an organizational level or God knows a societal level. It's a complex process. It's nonlinear. And I think the expectation that it's going to move in a particular way or at a particular rate or pace is where we suffer a lot around change.
And then we tell ourselves, once this change happens, I will be X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
And that I would imagine is where a lot of the trouble comes into.
Absolutely. So that's really what I'm finding very juicy and inspiring right now, is in helping people shift their relationships to change as well, from linear to nonlinear and complex, from command and control to you know, experiment and play. Right. And doing it in a way that is really connecting us to one another in the process, because we change in relationship. Right. And our relationships change us.
And in community. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So why do we need to embrace change as we get older, particularly? And what are the biggest obstacles have you found, do you think, in making the changes in our lives.
Yeah. I think as we get older, and because I work within an organizational context most of the time, what happens in businesses, I find, is it's as much about seniority as age, I would say. Maybe I'll tackle it from that way, but yeah. maybe it shows up in other ways too. But we kind of we do become, I think, more fixed if we aren't really working on staying open and curious about ourselves and about the world around us. I think we can easily become more fixed, and that becomes compounded by, you know, if you're an executive. You have spent your whole career doing things a certain way. You've been rewarded and promoted for doing things right. a certain way. And the fear, I think, the anxiety about trying something new, doing something different, the stakes just become higher. So staying open and learning to have some of that ease, to surf the curve, I like to say, rather than becoming tighter, rather than becoming more narrow, is something that I think in particular senior leaders, executive leaders, and also all of us as we go into our 40s and 50s need to actively work on. It comes so much easier to us in our 20s, our 30s. The stakes are lower. We don't have as much to lose, and we're actively in growth mode. We see ourselves right. that way. But I think we stop seeing ourselves in growth mode mm-hmm. after yeah. we reach a certain point. And that's really where we start to suffer as a result, and the people around us do too.
Living with that unknowingness about change, you know, seems like it, you know, one of the things that's terrifying about it is it leaves you open to failure. And I would imagine that's what keeps a lot of people from wanting to embrace change. And as you get older, you think, oh, well, I could swing that in my 30s. I could swing that in my 20s. Can I go and not suck at something now?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And what do you tell people, Kristen, who have that feeling?
You know, I usually will talk to them about the brain. So my training as a coach and my training as a mindfulness teacher both are through the lens of neuroscience. And I find it really useful to look at, like, what's the brain doing in those moments where we are trying to project into the future and all of this fear is coming up, or all of this, oh no, I couldn't possibly do that. There's all this risk. And I find it really useful to look at the different networks within the brain that are activated in this conversation. So one of these networks is our executive network, right? Our executive network includes our prefrontal cortex, our frontal lobe up here at the front of the brain. This is the part of the brain that's able to see into the future, to make plans, to strategize, to envision possibility, right? To make new connections. This is our rational and also imaginative network. And it is continually battling for resources, energy, with our limbic network. That's where our amygdala is in charge. It's keeping us safe. It's constantly scanning for threats. And I think that moment that you're pointing to, Kim, is where the limbic system is in charge. And the unfortunate thing about that part of our brain is that, well, A, it takes up all the energy in the brain. If the limbic system is activated, nothing else is happening, right? Mm-hmm. Our whole system is flooded with adrenaline and we are in survival mode, right? Fight or flight, that's what happens. But also, this part of our brain, the limbic system, doesn't know how to look into the future. It's non-discerning. It's not able to actually make choices. The only thing that our limbic system is doing is operating according to the past. It has no imagination. It simply can't look at the possibility that might lie on the other side of a big choice. It Bummer. Only sees danger. And I feel like understanding that is really useful for us to be like, okay, this is the part of my brain and it's trying to protect me and I understand this, but there's so much that I don't know. And kind of recognizing that we're in that reactive, protective place so that we can do what we need to do to shift into, okay, let me bring my prefrontal cortex back online and start thinking about what I want for my life, what I want for my business, what I want for my team.
Right.
Right.
And I think that one thing that what came up for me when you were talking a little bit earlier is that feeling of getting stuck and attached to old ways of doing things that you've been rewarded with. Your ego is so wrapped up in that. Your identity is so wrapped up in, well, this is who I am. This is how I do things. This is, and that rigidity is I find really hard to break apart, right? And then if you can't break it apart, but then as you get older, say you're looking for a job and nobody wants you and you're like, well, but this is how I do things. How they'll never want me. This isn't really a question, but it's an ego. I think it's an ego issue. And I wonder what you think about that, how the ego comes into this.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think you've just nailed the whole foundation of coaching work. Right? It's a great coaching candidate. First of all, we don't use coaching for like remedial performance issues, right? Coaching is for people who are, you know, high performing and ready to turn their next corner. And most successful coaching candidates are simply people who have run up against exactly what you're pointing to, Jen. Okay, I am doing things the way I've always done them and the returns are diminishing. And it's not working the way that it used to. And I appear to be pissing people off now, right? So that's what we're doing in a coaching engagement is we are looking at what are those old ways of working that are no longer serving? What are those old stories about ourselves, about the world, about the intersection, right? About how we can move through the world and be successful that are actually sabotaging us now. Maybe they have made us successful to a point. And then what are the new stories that we want to start to integrate into our behavior, but also into our neural systems that can take us out of a reactive place and into a much more creative one?
Let's talk about new stories. I'm interested in new stories. I want some new stories for myself. I want some new stories for my friends. I want some new stories. So a lot of this is about fear, right? It's about fear of failure in all ways. I mean, Kim was just getting at that, right? So it's like, you don't want to make an impulsive decision. Part of the reason we're so open to change when we're younger is because we have the confidence of ignorance, right? We are just moving through life and we're like, well, fuck it. If it just happens, I don't care. And also I'm great, right? Like, okay. So how do we move through and make moves in our life that don't feel impulsive and you could be afraid to make mistakes and you don't want to make a wrong decision that you're going to regret? Like, how do we deal with that sort of fear bucket?
Yeah. Yeah. Working with fear is a huge part of shifting this relationship to change. So I have some suggestions.
Great.
The first is we kind of need to befriend fear, right? We at least need to, if that sounds too ambitious, we at least need to notice when it's here. Right? We can just start with that, just noticing that it's here. When we can't see the fear, then it's in charge, right? It's taking us over. But if we can see it, then we can either do something about it or we can work around it. We can make other choices, right? So the first goal of this is to maybe hold fear in our hands, be like, okay, there you are. I see you, right? That can give us a little bit more freedom, a little bit more space. Then I think it is about starting small. You know, I think sometimes we put all of this pressure on ourselves to know exactly how it's going to go or to have the perfect plan or to do it all at once. But really, change is an accumulation, a compounding of little tiny shifts, right? So starting small and putting ourselves out there in some little way that allows us to test the ground, right? Find a new level of safety outside of our comfort zone and learn something about ourselves in the process. So starting small and really letting it build. And I think the third thing that I would say is about trust. And I don't really mean this in a woo-woo sense of like, trust the universe and everything, right? You know, is abundant.
Trust the process.
Lovely. Right. I mean, like, trust yourself, trust your future self, that if you make a quote wrong choice, you can always make another choice. You know, like you can go forward down a path and then make a right turn, right? So you're not in making a scary decision, committed to that decision for life, right? There's going to be moments where future you will have, you know, the ability to adjust as needed.
It feels like a lot of this requires some radical acceptance, you know, and not having such a black and white relationship to something like fear. You know, I remember when I was I was at a clinic for migraines and they had us write a letter to our pain, which I thought was like the corniest thing I'd ever heard. But being able to, like you were just saying, hold it in your hand and look at the pain and be like, you might actually be here for a while. You know, this doubt may actually be here for a while, whatever. And that's going to have to somehow be something that you can tolerate.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And that notion of radical acceptance, it does sound either counterintuitive or ridiculous or both at first, I think, until you notice that, oh, like I actually don't have any power here until I accept how things are. Mm-hmm. And then I have choice. And then I have agency, right? But if we spend all of our time wishing things were different, that's also where we're spending all of our energy and we don't have much to actually take some steps in the direction we might want to go.
Right. So, but wait, so I cut us off from, I got us on a different direction of telling different stories. I want to hear, because I feel like this is a thing that happens to everybody, you know, it defeats us and it deflates us. And, you know, we tell a story about ourselves over one action that happens during the day. You know, I'm too old. I'm a bad mother. I'm not good enough for this, whatever it is. When you really get mired in that, when you're just sort of in that, swimming in that pool, it's hard to see out of it, right? Because it might change the next day, but the day is a bad day. It's just like, I'm a piece of shit, right? How do you walk somebody through? I don't know if this is something that happens because you're not a therapist, but I'm sure somebody says to you, I feel like a piece of shit at a certain point in so many words. How do you help people get out of that moment? Because as you start to look at your own behavior, you're going to find things you don't like, right? As you're starting to change. And that moving through that is really hard, accepting that those things in yourself. So yes, there's my question.
Yeah. Two things come to mind. The first is pretty straightforward. Look to the evidence. You know, I'm a big believer in keeping a file in your email, in hard copy form, whatever, like keep a file of the evidence that you are in fact not a piece of shit, right? Like people send you a nice note, like save it. You know, I have a whole file where all of that good stuff lives. And guess what? I never look at it, but just knowing that it's there, when I have those thoughts, it's like, no, if I wanted to, I could go and read about all right. the evidence that has been submitted to me. that is in fact not true, right? So look to the evidence, right? Like just, and don't try to talk yourself out of it right. necessarily. Like let right. other people talk right. you out right. of it, right? And just keep that there. So I'm a fan of that strategy. And then the other thing that comes to mind for me, you know, related to the mindfulness piece is practicing kindness first and foremost to ourselves. So this is a separate practice from mindfulness practice if we're being technical about it. But you know, I like to say they're besties. You know, it's really hard to practice mindfulness, presence, really showing up for life in all of its difficulty if we are not also training in being kind right, right, to right. ourselves right, and to one right. another. And that takes training because it doesn't, to your point, Jen, like these stories just seep in and we accumulate them over the course of our lives. And we have to train ourselves out of those stories and replace them with kindness, care, compassion for ourselves first and foremost.
It's why the Zen masters are so happy. I've talked about this before. Like they just, the grooves in their brain that go to happiness and self-esteem are really well worn. The same way the grooves in a brain like mine or yours, Romolini, is really well worn towards I suck.
It's true though.
And yeah, and it takes, I mean, you talk about change. It takes so much work to try to like get as deep a groove of self-love as you've already got of self-loathing.
It's true, but here's the good news.
Give it. Blaring it off.
The good news, it takes a lot of work. Yeah. And it's hard work. Like starting to do these practices, it's trial right. by fire for sure. It's a crucible. But it doesn't actually take that long. So what Kim is talking about is the phenomenon of neuroplasticity. If we do different things with our minds, our brains actually shift in structure and in function. So by practicing mindfulness, self-compassion practices, kindness practices, your amygdala actually shrinks in terms of density. Okay. And your prefrontal cortex actually becomes thicker in terms of the gray matter in that part of your brain. It's like your weightlifting. It's no different from resistance training. And this happens not over the course of years of living in a cave, right, or a monastery, but in as little as 6 weeks of a daily 5-minute mindfulness practice, we will see differences showing up in your brain on a brain scan, on an MRI.
Let's take a quick break from some ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
And we're back!
So for somebody who's really afraid to take a first step, who wants some change, but is really scared and intimidated, would you say the first step is mindfulness practice?
I would say it is a useful lubricant, if you will. I would say, you know, you can certainly change without it for sure. But mm-hmm. I think if you want to kind of supercharge your journey, I would say developing that kind of self-awareness and developing that level of ease in relationship to volatility and discomfort is a very good strategy. I would also say, again, starting small, but starting with an idea of what you want life to be like on the other side. So in my ARC course, we talk about really starting with a vision for, and I think vision can be a very intimidating word. So really trying to just use that as an imaginative term.
A picture, mm-hmm. a picture.
Yeah, a picture. Paint yourself a picture in your mind. Yeah, exactly. What do you want that to be? And just give yourself that as a focal point that you can come back to again and again. And then make just tiny little like 1 degree, 2 degree turns in that direction. Don't try to do the full 45 degrees, right? I think it takes like 7 miles or something for a cruise ship to make a right turn. Like just give yourself like day by day, one little thing, inch. And those shifts compound over time. So it's kind of lowering our expectations of ourselves actually, right? And making it real small, making it granular, and then appreciating the progress as we go, right? Letting ourselves notice, oh, I'm slightly less of a piece of shit today than I was 3 weeks ago, right? Like we can notice, or I'm doing this a little bit more than I used to. You know, right. I coach a lot of leaders over a period of time, and every quarter or so, I'm like, okay, let's look back. Where were you a year ago? What was going on? What were you freaking out about? What were you worried about? What were you afraid of? And those moments of reflection and appreciation are game changing because people can actually see their change. They can see, oh my God, this is working. I'm doing it. And a lot of the time, that's really what we need is that kind of evidence.
What I'm hearing from you is that we need some discipline. That's what it's sounding like to me. Like it sounds to me like this requires just a discipline with yourself, because in order to train in order to get out of our own suffering, in order to get out of our own way, in order to make these kinds of changes, I think we need some order and discipline. Do you think that's correct?
Doesn't sound very fun though, does it?
I know it doesn't. I know you're going to want to turn this into fun, but it's true.
Well, you know, I think what it takes is responsibility.
Okay.
So maybe I'll just offer you that as an also unsexy word. but like, I think we have to take responsibility for ourselves here, you know, and a way we might think about this is, you know, change is inevitable, right? It's inevitable. Right. It's going to happen. The choice that we have is it going to happen to us? Are we going to be recipients or victims of it? Or is it going to happen through us because we're kind of stepping into that agency because we're taking responsibility for how we show up in our work or in the world or in a relationship or in a system, right? And I guess the reason I'm having a reaction to discipline is because I think that we already work really, really hard on being hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I don't want anybody to work any harder. You know, what I want you to do is relax a little bit and step into your power here and think about what's possible through me, rather than trying to drink from the fire hose of all of the change that's happening to you.
What about a change though? Like I'm thinking about like, I need to work out. I don't work out. I need to enact that change in my life. Like that feels to me like something that I need to have something like discipline for if I'm going to build a new habit around exercise.
Yeah, I think that is typically where people start with new habits. But let me ask you this, Kim, why do you want to work out more?
Because I'm almost 60 and because it feels like a woman my age needs to be just, you know, exercising in order to maintain. Also because I think it's mentally healthier to exercise.
Okay.
Those would be my main reasons.
So I hear one of those as kind of a should, you know, people of my age should do this. And the other one is, you know, this is mentally healthy for me. Are you speaking from experience there? Like you've had experiences
where
you've worked out and you've actually felt better.
I know that I've felt better. Yeah.
I find that to be a much more compelling why, right? Than I know that I should. So, everybody out there, don't should all over yourself, right? Let that go. Try to tap into the part of you that is going to feel fed and fueled by this shift. And then we can do a little bit of thinking around, okay, so what's it going to be like on the other side when you're actually, you know, let's say you're exercising 3 times a week, right? Something that's like, what's that going to feel like? What's your life going to look like, right? Paint that picture for us for just a minute, Kim, if you would. What's that going to look like?
Exercising?
Yeah.
It's going to look like, I feel like I can breathe deeper when I exercise. I feel like I can, you know, I just feel better when I exercise. So I feel better. But then there's also the other side of it, which is when I do exercise, I get really compulsive about it. And so part of why I haven't started exercising is that knowledge that as soon as I do, it will become one of the main things I think about.
Mm. And maybe there's not a lot of space to think about something else that deeply.
I don't know. There seems to be a lot of space today.
All right. So you have a kind of a compelling reason why, right? That's personal to you and that there's some benefit to. You have also a sense of kind of what some barriers might be or what's holding you back. Is there a small step that you could take today that is not going all the way into full-on workout mode, right? But what's the tiniest possible step that you could take today?
The tiniest possible step I could take would be to take my dog for an extra walk or just go out on my own on a longer walk than I usually do. That would be a small, manageable step.
Would you like to do that? It's a beautiful day today.
It is a beautiful day. I'm getting my roots done though, so I'm going to have to do it tomorrow.
Fantastic. Sounds like a plan. Start tomorrow.
Yeah.
And this is, so I guess my point is let's try to bring it down from the big idea of this being a massive life change, of the idea of, oh, it's going to immediately become compulsive. Every change that ever happens in our own lives, in our relationships, in our work, in our communities, in our country, in our globe is the accumulation of little tiny choices. Right. And so let's not worry about a year from now. Let's worry about today, or in Kim's case, tomorrow. right? And taking
because the little tiny, choices are what got us here. Like a lifetime of this choice, which maybe wasn't the best one, and this one that worked, and every, you know, it's all what it's what composes you.
And I think that's exactly right. And I think it's a good full circle return to mindfulness, right? What is mindfulness other than the opposite of mindlessness? So those little choices we've been making mindlessly on autopilot, not really making choices, just defaulting to, you know, the way that we do things, to come back to where Jen was taking us earlier. You know, if we are practicing making our choices intentionally, they're more likely to be healthier for us. They're more likely to serve the vision that we actually have rather than the reality that we're currently maybe stuck in.
We hear a lot from women in their 40s and 50s who feel like they didn't ever find their thing, like it didn't happen for them. And, you know, work-wise mostly. What kind of advice would you have for somebody who's really tormented by that?
I relate to that a lot. That was has been a journey in my life. I imagine a lot of us feel that way. What is our thing? That's like another really big question that just is so pressurized, right? Like, oh, I haven't found my thing. Like, what makes me special? But what if it's not a big answer? You know, what if you're special? I'm sitting here looking at Romolini, right? Who, like, every time I talk to her, she notices a new thing about me that I didn't even know about myself, right? That it's like, turns out like there are these things about you, you know, that are your thing. And again, I think it comes back to expectations, right? Like maybe your thing is not, I remember, okay, back in my type A days, I was obsessed with this question. Oh my God, what I want, what I'm doing to have purpose. And I want to make an impact, and I want to have, you know, I want to matter. And I remember a colleague of mine saying to me, you know, Kristen, some people, their thing is just throwing dinner parties. Like they don't get all of that value or sense of self from work. And as somebody who's always been really deeply identified with work, and still am, if I'm honest, that was mind-blowing to me, you know, that there could be other sources of meaning, of purpose, of value, of having a thing. And I think that is worth exploring, right? Where is the meaning in your life? To kind of taking it off of the I'm not enough trajectory of like, I haven't found my thing yet, and more into, you know, what do I love in this life? What makes me feel full? What makes me feel connected? You know, maybe it's just like walking down the street on a beautiful day and smiling at a stranger. Maybe it's organizing flowers in a vase on your kitchen counter. You know, maybe it's sitting down and having a meal with a friend or a family member. You know, I think there's what we think meaning means. And then there's the tiny little momentous moments of meaning in our lives that we so easily skip over and miss. So I don't know if that's an answer to that question, but that's what comes to mind.
I think it is an answer to that question, because I think that searching for the thing is fruitless, because the thing is about the thing is once you get the thing, once you find the thing, this is what I was born to do. You're like, oh, the thing didn't fucking fix anything. The thing fixed fucking nothing.
Yes. Because the hole inside that we think, you know, is going to be, you know, oh, as soon as I accomplish, as soon as I achieve, as soon as I am known for this, right, I will be complete.
100%. And I'll tell you that I've learned that lesson, and I've been rooked by it again and again. I've just recently been rooked by it. Like, you think that there's a certain kind of accomplishment, achievement, accolade, something that's going to change foundationally how you feel about yourself. And it is absolutely not the case. It is just, and every time, every fucking time I set a new goal and I chase that goal and I meet that goal and I put every fucking thing I have into that goal to the expense of almost everything else, right? Just like, okay, mm-hmm. And there it is. There's the goal. And then the goal just fucking drops me out again. And it's, you know, we got on this call today and I'm feeling so fragile because I just got rooked in this same cycle again, thinking that an external achievement was going to change internally how I felt. And it just doesn't. And you get caught up in it and other people get caught up in it. And this is all our compare and despair on the fucking social media. Like, oh, that life is better than mine. When it is absolutely what you're saying. It is the fucking flowers. It is calling my friend during the day. It is a nice moment with my child. Like that's what we have.
I'm going to invoke a debate that you and I have had so many times over the years, which is, it's ambition versus intention. And, you know, Kim, you asked me earlier, like, oh, what was the shift that you made? And this was one way to think about something that I did really consciously at an earlier time in my life when I was really going through it. I had been super ambitious for many years. And I decided at one point, I'm going to give this up. I'm going to give this up. It is not doing what I thought it was going to do for me. So I no longer have a goal for myself. I no longer have a goal in terms of like what I want my life to look like. Instead, I'm going to make some commitments in terms of how I want to show up. And I'm going to be intentional about bringing those qualities forward anywhere I go, right? So I stopped setting New Year's resolutions. I now set New Year intentions. And each year I have one word that I bring with me throughout the year. And I think you can have many, but for me, one works because I can remember one and I can take it with me into every situation I go in. This year, it's equanimity. I have a little workbook, by the way, I'll send it your way. I do this every year and I put it out. And it's a beautiful little practice to say, okay, what do I want this year to be about? And it's remarkable that when I stopped being so ambitious and driven toward that goal, how my career took off. Right? I think it's because our ambition is actually limiting, right? You're limited by the scope of your own imagination, aren't you? Like when you start to just like show up, right? Everywhere you go and kind of with an integrity and with a sense of, okay, this is who I am and I'm enough and I'm going to really try to show up purposefully, mindfully, intentionally in this moment, in this conversation, then shit just happens, right? Things just open to you, people open to you, opportunities open to you. You open to yourself and you find out, I think, what you're really capable of in a way that I don't think is available to us when we are on that hamster wheel and when we are really, you know, chasing or clinging to a goal or an outcome.
It feels like it's very important to embrace like learner's brain for all of this.
Totally. Totally. It's like the Zen Buddhists, right? They call beginner's mind or there's growth mindset. The openness and curiosity, that's a key element of any mindfulness practice. It's like, you know, if the judge is there, if the critic is there and you're not enough and you should know this already, you're sabotaging yourself, right? But yeah, that openness and curiosity and learning always.
I love what you said about our ambition being limiting to some degree, because it's also going back to what we were talking about earlier, ambition toward a goal, there's a desperation to it, there's a force to it. You're absolutely right. And then I don't know if you said force, but I just made that up. But there's also, it is the amygdala firing because there's a survival to it. It feels energetic in a way that can feel frenetic, you know, whereas an addictive, addictive. Yes. The high from it. Absolutely. The high from accomplishment. And then when you're not accomplishing, and this is the over-identifying with your career, when you're not accomplishing, you're just like, well, now I'm nothing.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, we'll all do it. We all do it to varying degrees. I mean, no matter where you're at, you're like, oh, should I be doing more? Should I not? Should I not?
There are those shoulds again. Like literally, if people take nothing away from this episode, I hope it's don't should all over yourself. Like anytime a should comes up, be wary, right? It's not doing you any favors. This is not the story that you want driving your decision-making. This is not the story that is going to get you where you want to go, right? Find a new story. Find a new sense of meaning here.
I want to get into, because we do have a lot of listeners who are bosses, who are struggling to be bosses, who are managers, who are working in the world. And I think that you do so much work with executives and office culture, and you and I have discussed toxic workplaces like ad nauseum, right? I mean, we've had this conversation like for a decade. I know this is probably a big question, but what are some top lines to building healthier work environments?
Yeah, I think I can top line this. It's super complex, obviously. I think about organizational culture as an ecosystem. So that might be kind of a snapshot way of thinking about it is, you know, think about a coral reef, right? That's your organizational culture. That's your ecosystem. You have to create an environment where everybody's contributing to the health and success of the whole. And that is, you know, kind of calibrated to allow for that kind of contribution, right? So leaders themselves don't necessarily own the culture, but they do set the temperature of the water, right? They decide if the water is hot or cold or what have you, in terms of the choices that they make. In terms of that calibration, my shorthand for it is you want to think about your organizational culture as a balance of safety and challenge, right? Safety and challenge continually in balance, you know, and you're always kind of recalibrating, right? Because stuff happens and they're going to be in a high challenge mode. It's a big deadline, huge project, big initiative, big new client or customer coming in. That's challenge mode. But so you might need to bring up the safety. And by safety, I mean psychological safety, right? Are we safe to be ourselves first and foremost and really be who we are? Are we safe to take risks? Are we safe to make mistakes and learn from them, right? To go back to learner's mind. So is there that safety to be you, to be a work in progress, right? And to be human in this environment. And then the challenge is everything from that vision that you're setting for your people. It's the kind of feedback you're giving them, right? Constructive feedback. Here's how you can improve, right? As well as appreciative feedback. Here's what I want you to keep doing because it's working. How do you navigate conflict in your workplace? Right? That's a challenge that has to be faced. Otherwise, your ecosystem will become toxic very quickly because it'll all keep running under the surface. So we don't control our culture, your culture, not words on the wall. It is absolutely the water that you and your people are swimming in. And there are ways to intentionally cultivate an ecosystem that will support a healthy, high-performance workplace.
How do you teach people to advocate for themselves if they're not in that kind of a workplace?
I think going back to the idea that change compounds, it starts small and compounds, find your people, right? Find the ARC course, we talk about them as the early adopters, right? Who are the people who are with you on this? If you are somebody who is committed to making change within your organization, whether it's, you know, shifting a toxic culture or making a strategic shift, start with the people who see things the way that you do and who share a vision for what's possible and start building with them. And again, start small, right? Don't march into the CEO's office and demand change. They will not understand, right? They will have all of those fears we talked about earlier. We can't possibly do it any differently, right? The reason most workplaces are toxic is because leadership thinks this is how it has to be in order for us to deliver results. So we have to start showing them that there are other ways to be really effective. And in fact, that we are limiting our effectiveness if we are dehumanizing one another, if we are burning ourselves and one another out, if we are ratcheting up the challenge and not creating safety, or if we are easing into, you know, the safety of our comfort zones and not adequately challenging ourselves and one another. That's another fast track to a toxic workplace. At the end of the day, you know, the leaders have to be in on the mission to shift the culture because they do have such inordinate power in those systems. And that's why leadership coaching is such an important part of any cultural change initiative. The leaders have to be doing the work themselves because it's an inside out game.
before we go, I think we should talk about, so somebody who is listening to this right now, who's in midlife, dealing with all of the midlife fucking shit, right? And feeling kind of hopeless right now, like the change they want is never going to happen. How do we give people sort of a comfort and hope in this sort of, this is my last question to you, Kristen Lasanti.
Okay, this being everything is fine, I'm going to say something that I would not say on any other podcast. So here goes. Fuck comfort. Just fuck it. Just, you know, it's not okay.
I don't want to get but certain. No, get, let's bring it. I come, know. Go.
I'm a Taurus. Nobody loves comfort more than me. But if we are focused on staying comfortable, we are not going to be agents of change in our own worlds. You know, I think that really developing a sense of, I'll go back to what Kim was saying earlier, radical acceptance with discomfort. Okay, this is uncomfortable right now. This is really not pleasant, right? And you don't have to make it pleasant. Just knowing, okay, unpleasant. Fear is here. Pain is here. Insecurity is here, right? Being with that can teach us we can take it. I'm stronger than I thought I was. I can actually abide stepping outside of this comfort zone. You know, if you think about it, how comfortable is your comfort zone if really the reason you're there is because you're so afraid?
Right.
And because it's like a hiding, if it's a hiding hole, yeah. How comfortable is it?
How comfortable is it really, right? If you're being kept there by all those demons and those old stories. But I think comfort with discomfort. So if you're gonna lean in on comfort, practice getting comfortable with discomfort, right? Practice sitting with pain. Practice sitting with the difficulty of life because it's here. It's a fact. Hope, I think is important. But again, I think it's hope plus responsibility. I think it's hope plus, okay, you know what? I'm going to make a new choice today and make it a small one. And the next one will probably be a little bit bigger and that'll be okay. And you'll be ready for it.
Oh, this has been so inspiring. Thank you.
You're the best. Where can people find you, Kristen Lasanti? I know where to find you, but where can the people find you?
People can find me at kristenlasanti.com. If you would like, you have many options there. You can sign up for one of my courses. You can sign up for my weekly newsletter, We Can Change. It's about to go on hiatus for the summer, but then it will be back. That's probably the best place to start.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Everything Is Fine. We are your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review. It really helps people find the show, especially on Apple Podcasts. If you want to support the production of the show and help us keep the lights on, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/everythingisfine. We do live events there. We blog there. We do special bonus episodes. It's a cup of coffee a month. If you want to follow the show on social media, we're at EIF Podcast on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on LinkedIn. If you want to email us, you can email us at everythingisfinethepodcast@gmail.com. You can find Kim on her Substack, kimfrance.substack.com. You can find me on tidingletter.com/Jennifer Romolini. The show is mixed and edited by the great Natalie Rivera. Thank you as always, Natalie, and we'll be back next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.